Welcome to What a Creep, the show with Margot Donahue and Sonia Mansfield talking about creeps from the past to the present.
This is your quick guide to the biggest creeps, jerks, assholes, and losers, the best of the worst.
From two nice ladies who want the world to be a little less creepy.
Welcome back to What a Creep. This is Margot Donahue, and my cohort in creepitude, as always, is the amazing Sonia Mansfield. Hey, Sonia.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. So we are going to get a little arty-farty here, aren't we?
So artsy-fartsy. Everyone put your pinkies up. Get out your monocles. We're going to talk about art.
If this is your first time listening, we are the podcast that talks about creeps from the past to the present. Sonia and I take turns talking about a creep, and then the other person comes up with a non-creep to counterbalance the creepiness so you don't leave feeling completely despondent about the state of the world. That's what's going to happen today. I want to say thank you to some new Patreon members, Gemma and Haley. Thank you guys so much. If you sign up for our Patreon page, we have bonus episodes and we've got bonus content going on there. And you and I were just talking about what we want to put on our next bonus episode.
I have so much extra stuff left over from this episode. It is going to be a really good bonus up on this one.
And I have some stuff left over about Whitey Bulger. So we'll definitely put that in our Patreon episode. Just go to Patreon and look up What a Creep Podcast. Thank you so much for supporting us. Also, I want to give a shout out to Jeff, because Jeff not only left us a 5-star review in iTunes, he boosted it, which I didn't know was a thing.
What? I don't know about that.
Yeah. So, Jeff, tell us how you did it. But thank you so much for the review. It really helps us find our people. We so, so appreciate it. You could follow us on Facebook. We do have a basic Facebook page. I'll probably ditch it one day now. But the best thing to do is
someday.
But the best thing to do is to join our Facebook group. We're much more interactive there. It's a private group. You have to ask to join. If you show up and you don't have a logo or an image and no followers and you joined Facebook yesterday, probably not going to get in.
If you look like a juggalo, you're probably not going to get in.
We're just saying. But if you do get in, it's a great place to hang out with people.
Yes.
And we talk about creeps. It's just the best group of people. We're super, super excited and to have you guys join us there. We have Twitter. And on Twitter, we're at CreepPod because somebody had What a Creep for 10 years and never used it.
Creep!
We're on Instagram. We're being more interactive there as well. What a Creep Podcast. We have an email. Just spell it all out. whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. If you would like some stickers, promise... Pinky swear, I'm going to send out stickers next week, you guys. I just got a little caught up this week, but if you'd like some stickers, send us an email, whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. We're also very interactive there. If you have comments or suggestions, one of the suggestions we took from somebody through email was that we should have trigger warnings put at the top of the show so you guys can figure out whether or not you want to listen in. And like, we really, really appreciate that. We are approachable. We're not monsters. If you you want to talk to us about stuff, please let us know. Also, we have a website that Sonia put together. It's really spiffy. Can you tell them about that?
Yes, you can go to whatacreeppodcast.com and you can find everything you ever wanted to know about our podcast there, including all of our old episodes. And there are links to the Patreon page and our merch shop where you can get really cute stuff like sweatshirts and journals and tote bags. And we have our cute, adorable logo, Everybody Drink, that Claude and Cloud on Instagram made for us. And we have Not a Creep, a logo that says Not a Creep that you could get on a mask. And we also have Maybe Next Year.
Which is what I'm wearing right now.
I wear that one on a mask and I get a lot of compliments. And then I'm going to upload a few more designs soon. I've got a couple of rando ideas that I think people might like.
Excellent. So we should also say that this is a podcast where we use salty language. If your ears are not prone to listening to salty language, you better get the fuck out now because you're just not going to be happy.
Correct.
So, Sonia, who are we talking about today?
Pablo Picasso. Have you ever heard of Pablo Picasso?
Of course. I'm not a moron.
Maybe you've heard of him. He's like a famous artist or something. He is one of the most influential artists of the 20th century. He is known for co-founding the Cubist movement. Sorry, I haven't been drinking, I promise. The invention of constructed sculpture, the co-invention of collage. I didn't know this. And really just a wide variety of styles. Like, you know, his career lasted 78 years. He created more than 147,000 works of art. That's insane. Yes. 147,000 works of art, including paintings and designs, prints, engravings, book illustrations, sculptures, ceramics. He did like costuming and stuff like that for like operas and ballets. And dude was an amazing artist. Super shitty man. He was just a shitty man. He was a real piece of shit. Just to just about every woman he claimed to love. He cheated on all his lovers and at least indirectly drove two of them to suicide. He used them for his own self-serving needs, you know, for inspiration. And then when he wasn't inspired anymore, he just moved on, usually while he was still with someone. In her memoir, Picasso, My Grandfather, Marina Picasso wrote, "He submitted them to his animal sexuality, tamed them, bewitched them, ingested them, and crushed them into his canvas. After he had spent many nights extracting their essence, once they were bled dry, he would dispose of them."
Yikes.
Yeah, that's his granddaughter. I don't say that kind of shit about my grandpa. Damn. Trigger warnings for domestic abuse and cheating. Lots and lots of cheating. Oh, and suicide. I'm sorry. Yes, and suicide. What's up with this dirtbag? Let's start at the beginning. And I did. I tried really hard to get names right. Some of these names are really tough. I'm going to focus on the women in his life. This isn't an art history podcast, y'all. So if you want to know about like what his different periods of art are, you should look that up. That's not my jam. I talk about creeps, not art history. So I really did try to focus on the women. I also looked up how to pronounce all their names. But, and you're going to see right now why this is very hard, because I didn't look up how to pronounce all of these names, and this is going to be hard. This is his name. Pablo Diego Jose Francisco de Paula Juan Nepocino Maria de los Remedios Caprino de la Santa Mia Trinidad Martyr Patricio Clito Rias y Picasso.
That's his fucking name?
That is his name. That's his name. He has 23 names.
How many times was he confirmed?
I don't know.
Jesus.
I know. I am sorry. I am not very good at names, and that's a lot of names. So please, please, please forgive me, everybody. But he was born October 25th, 1881 in Spain. And yes, he had 23 names. He was the first child of Don Jose Rias y Blasco and Maria Picasso y Lopez. His father was a painter, surprise, who specialized in natural depictions of animals. And he was a professor of art at the School of Crafts and a curator at a local museum. At a very young age, Picasso showed a passion and a skill for drawing. His first word, according to his mother, was piz, which is Spanish for pencil.
Oh.
Yeah. So according to his mother, actually, he could also draw before he could talk. These could be legends, but that's what she says. From the age of 7, Picasso started receiving formal artistic training from his father. He was doing like figure drawing and oil painting. He's 7. I'm like, I was still like finger painting and probably making a mess. Not doing this. In 1895, Picasso, he was 14, was very traumatized. His sister, she was 7. Her name was Conchita, died of diphtheria.
Ooh, yikes.
It's a nasty one. I looked it up on Wikipedia and I was like, wish I hadn't looked that up. It sucks. So when she was sick, Picasso made this pact with God, and he offered to sacrifice his artistic gift to God if he would save her. And then he was very conflicted. Like, he wanted her to live, but then he wanted to keep his gift. And she died. I know. This is all ridiculous. It's all ridiculous
he's
stuff.
He's a kid.
I just realized. Okay, hold on. I'm going to finish the sentence. So she died because it's an awful disease. And then after that, he really just took that as God wanted him to be a painter and fuck the consequences. Like, he would just do whatever he wanted. And I forgot to mention all the sources. So I'm going to scroll back up here to the top. I obviously am not an expert in art. I read a ton of stuff about Picasso, including stuff from Art Dex, Thought Co., The Paris Review, Biography, The Atlantic, The Guardian. I watched an interview with Francois Guillot on CBS Morning News. She's funny as shit. I really liked her. History Collection, Picasso.org, and of course, Wikipedia, the unofficial sponsor of this podcast.
God bless Wikipedia. We should say that all these are going to be in our show notes, too, so you guys can read it for yourselves.
Yes. I am so sorry that I got so far into my story, but without doing the sources. We always list our sources. And like I said, we're going to focus on the women here because art history is not my jam. So I kind of focused it on these six women in particular, where he was like a massive creep. And they also had huge influences on his art. And I'll try to call that out when appropriate. So the first one is Fernande Olivier. And she was born Amelie Lang, but she had a really difficult childhood. She married an abusive husband and because she was trying to get away from her crazy family.
Right.
At 19, she left her husband, changed her name, and fled to Paris. And that's where she met Picasso. And she became his model and his lover. And if you're interested in this sort of thing, she really played an influence in his Rose period and his early Cubist work. If once again, that means nothing to me, but it might mean something to someone else. They quickly moved in together. This was 1905. And he, of course, demanded that she stop modeling for other artists. And he would go as so far as to lock her in their apartment.
Jesus.
To stop her from modeling for other artists. And then that kind of turned into a regular thing where he would just lock her into the apartment so she couldn't go out into public without him.
She also can't make a living.
Yes. He's very jealous throughout their relationship. He painted like more than 60 portraits of her, and their relationship ended because they both ended up cheating on each other. Like, but he cheated on everybody. When they broke up, Picasso was very famous, and she decided to cash in on their relationship by publishing a memoir in a Belgian newspaper. And to prevent her from like sharing any more details about their time together, he offered her like a shit ton of money and she took it. But after they died, the memoir was released anyway. So if you're interested, it's out there. Good try. Good try, Picasso. So after that, we have Olga Koklova. I looked all of these up. I spelled it out phonetically. I'm trying so hard, y'all. She was a ballet dancer when she met Picasso, and he was working on the costumes and the set designing for her dance company. And shortly after meeting him, she left the dance company and got married. They got married. So July 1918, and they moved to France. A few years later, she gave birth to his first child, and it's a son named Paolo. And during his time with Olga, that's when he was going through his realistic forms phase, and he would paint all these beautiful pictures of motherhood and domestic life, and it sounds super sweet, but the truth is, by the time the son was born, he was already cheating on her with multiple women.
Of course.
And one of those women was Marie Theresa Walter, and we're going to talk about her in a little bit. But as Picasso got more involved with Marie, and the more he cheated, the more like Olga would freak out and like yell and scream and have these fits of jealousy and would show up wherever he was and yell at him. And it was very dramatic. He would fuck with her. Basically, he would let her know where he was with other women so that she could come in and see it and freak out.
He wanted the drama.
This is going to come up over and over and over. So I read a couple of conflicting stories about what happened next. So there are stories that Olga asked for a divorce, but he refused because he didn't want to divide his assets with her. But there's also stories that he asked for a divorce and she was like, nah, fuck you, and didn't give him a divorce. So honestly, either of these are possible scenarios. But they did separate. They never divorced. She suffered a nervous breakdown and died of cancer in 1955. She was still married to him when she died. Yeah, he continued to fuck with her the rest of her life. She'll continue to pop up throughout these stories. So after that, we had Marie Theresa Walter. Picasso was 45 years old, and he was married to Olga when he met Marie. She was 17.
Ay-ay-ay.
Yeah, she was walking out of a department store in Paris, and she says that he simply grabbed me by the arm and said, "I'm Picasso. You and I are going to do great things together."
Spooker.
So fucking so.
Hey, when you're 17, I'm sure that's a very heady thing. You're just like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. She said, "I resisted for 6 months, but you don't resist Picasso. You understood me. A woman doesn't resist Picasso." Which sounds a little.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, still married to Olga at this point. When he would travel with his family, he would keep Marie stashed away nearby.
Did he lock her in a room?
Sadly, no. No, he did not. No. Because he didn't have to. She was totally into it, apparently. Yeah, he kept her nearby. And then in order to like make the cheating even easier and save time, he actually set Marie up in an apartment like directly across the street from him and his wife.
How convenient.
I know, it's so convenient. Yeah. Who wants to spend time commuting when you're having an affair?
Well, like Bob Hope, he had the little apartments for his girlies all over the place. And we would walk in like the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if y'all care, this Marie was a big influence on his classicism period. Classicism?
I don't know. Is that how you know? I don't know.
Yeah. And he got really into sculpture when he was with her. Whatever. Fuck him. He kept this relationship with Marie a secret from Olga for about 8 years. His relationships actually lasted quite a long time. These women put up with some bullshit. So for 8 years, Marie was like his side piece. But eventually, Olga heard that Marie was pregnant. And that's when Olga and Picasso separated. And Marie says, one day I found out I was pregnant, and he fell on his knees, wept, and told me it was the greatest happiness of his life.
Oh my God, what a fucking drama queen. I can't keep saying that, but
yeah.
Oh my God.
It's also all a fucking lie, because at the same time that his daughter was born, Picasso, who is now 53 years old, met someone new. He's already moved on to a French photographer named Dora Maar. We're going to talk about her in 1 minute. So Marie gave birth to Picasso's daughter, Maya. And during this time, Marie was like waiting for Picasso to divorce Olga. He kept telling her it was going to happen, and the divorce never happened, and they were never married. So she just like kind of put her life on hold and waited for him.
And her youth. I mean, she gave him her youth.
Yes. And it never happened. So then we have Dora Maar, and she was a photographer and a political activist. And she had this very strong influence on him. She had a very powerful personality. And they began like experimenting with photography and painting, and Picasso's art is very like harsh angles and bold colors, apparently. Once again, I did a lot of reading. So remember how Picasso was with Olga when he just would set up Marie across the street? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just kept doing that shit because it works. He had Marie and his daughter in a house nearby. And then he set up an apartment with Dora nearby.
He's got to make a lot of money to support all these people, right?
Yeah. And he's really famous at this. He's selling lots of art. Everyone knows who he is. And that's partly why he gets all these women, right? He's super famous.
Yeah.
So he sets up Marie and his daughter at their house nearby Dora. And then he's just fully into Dora now. But he doesn't want Marie to leave him. So he keeps sending her these very passionate love letters because he's gaslighting her.
Oh, God.
You know, "I love you the most. You're the most important thing to me, blah, blah, blah." And it worked for a while. But apparently Marie wasn't too stupid, because she could see his art and she could see that he was painting someone else, not her. So, and he said it must be painful for a girl to see in a painting that she's on the way out.
Oh yeah. Oh God, what a dick.
Isn't he a dick? He's such a dick.
Asshole.
He's such a dick. So one day Marie showed up at his studio in Paris, and Dora was there. And here's a bunch of quotes. She says, "I have a child by this man. you know, it's my place to be here with him and you can leave now. And then Dora says, I have as much reason to be here as you do. This is my impression of them, by the way, because I can't do accents. So throughout the exchange, Picasso just kept on painting. He didn't even fucking look up. Like, he doesn't even care or whatever. He's just painting. And they're like, no, he's my man. You get away from my man. And then Marie says, you need to make up your mind which one of us goes. And then Picasso said, it was a hard decision to make. I like them both for different reasons. Marie, because she was sweet and gentle and did whatever I wanted her to. Mm-hmm. And Dora, because she was intelligent. I decided I had no interest in making a decision. I was satisfied with things the way they were. Of course he was. I told them they'd have to fight it out themselves. And they begin to wrestle. It is one of my choicest moments.
What a fucking dick.
He's such a dick.
Oh, God. It's like this cat fight.
Yes.
For this asshole. Oh,
yes.
Yay.
And he would do this all the time. He would pit these women against each other. These women would never direct their anger at him. It was always at each other.
Right.
And he did it repeatedly with Dora and Marie. And then, and every once in a while, he would like drag Olga into it. So here's a story about one time he was on vacation with Dora. He set up Marie nearby on his vacation. And then when he felt like that wasn't dramatic enough for him, he would tell his son Paolo where he was. And then Paolo would tell his mother Olga. And then Olga would show up and assault the woman who happened to be standing next to Picasso.
Sorry.
Isn't this batshit insane?
This is, oh my God. Those poor kids watching their dad behave this way.
I know. Almost everyone in these stories, they're all fucked up. He loved having power over others and he loved manipulating people and getting like all this drama. He fucking loved this shit. Like his earlier relationships, he started cheating on Dora too. And this time it was with a 21-year-old painter named Francois Guillot. And we're going to talk about her in a bit because we need to finish with Dora. So when Dora found out about Francois, she dismissed it. And she said she would never be supplanted by, quote, the schoolgirl. She said to Picasso that Francois might have a place in bed, but not at the table. And then Picasso immediately invited Francois over to dinner with him and Dora.
Oh, because my God.
Because he's a huge asshole.
Holy shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah, right?
Dick.
He's such
so
a
manipulative.
Dick. Yeah. I mean, he wanted to shove it in her face.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the important
cheating.
One, not you.
Yeah. I do what I want. He started spending more time with Francois, and then Dora was desperate to get his attention. And so she started pretending that she was attacked and robbed. First, she said a man attacked her and stole her dog. I don't know what happened to the dog, by the way. I really tried to find out. But this is the thing. She said a man attacked her and stole her dog. This didn't really happen. She was just creating a bunch of drama in hopes that like Picasso would notice her. And then the second time it happened again, she said someone beat her up and took her bicycle. The second time it happened, Picasso called a psychiatrist that apparently he used to call all the time for every medical problem. And he came to the studio and he took Dora away and took her to his clinic and he treated her with electric shock therapy. Fucked up.
I'm looking at IMDb really quickly because I can multitask. There's a movie called Surviving Picasso. Have you ever seen it?
I have not, and I didn't watch it before this.
No, I've never seen it either. I'm just looking. It just popped into my head. So Anthony Perkins plays Picasso.
Yeah.
Julianne Moore plays Dora.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to watch it, but I was afraid that it would like take me away from the facts because it's a Hollywood movie.
Well,
so,
and Anthony Hopkins is like very much like, he wasn't so bad. Arianna Huffington wrote the book. Holy shit. Creator and Destroyer.
Yeah, isn't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the article we're linking to in The Atlantic is like a huge chunk of that book.
Interesting. James Ivory. Wow.
Yeah, it's maybe it's a good movie. There's also a mini series Vice with Antonio Banderas playing Picasso.
Oh, I love Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. I also entertained the idea of trying to watch that, but once again was like, I'm afraid that it would glamorize it a little too much. So I actually intend to go back and watch them now that I'm getting all of this out. Where do we leave off? Oh, shock therapy. That's right. Okay. After that, Picasso took Francois to Dora's house for a holiday. Dora had just gotten out of her shock therapy, but he didn't give a shit. He just showed up with his new lover at his old lover's house. And Francois wrote, "Everything was a trap. He was the perfect trap setter, and his timing could not have been worse since Dora was recovering from her attack of insanity."
Okay, that's not his brilliance. He's just a shithead.
Yeah, he's just an asshole.
Yeah, that's not brilliance. I mean, don't give him that much credit. He's not brilliant about when it comes to this. He's just evil.
Yeah, he is. I agree.
Yeah.
So eventually he broke up with Dora, and she suffered a nervous breakdown and became a recluse. So that sucks. So now we're going to talk about Francois Guillot. Mm-hmm. She was 21 when she met him. He was 61.
Mm-hmm.
1943. And she was a painter, too. And once again, we have a link in the show notes of an interview with her with CBS Morning News. She's delightful. I encourage y'all to watch it. He told her that she was too beautiful to be a painter.
Oh, fuck you.
I know, right?
Sorry. This guy.
But she was like 21, and like everyone, right? You make really shitty romantic choices at 21. Now,
and
she even said,
older than her, yeah.
Much older. And he's super famous at this point. And she said, "He was a catastrophe I didn't want to avoid." And she said that he didn't like a woman with a lot of personality, and that she put her personality in a pocket for him. And they moved in together, and eventually they had a son and a daughter, Claude and Paloma.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never listed as the father on their birth certificates, which is going to come into play later. So let's put a little pin in that. He said a lot of his fucked up shit to her because she ended up writing a book. Spoiler, she wrote a book. And so here's some of the things he said to her. Women are machines for suffering. Yeah. For me, there are only two kinds of women, goddesses and doormats. He's such an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would just, you know, he was very, very cruel to her. He was physically abusive to her.
Okay.
And when he got tired of her, he would say things like, "I don't know why you're here. Like, it would be more fun to go to a brothel. And there's nothing so similar to one poodle dog as another poodle dog. And that goes for women, too."
Oh, my God. I just can't even.
I know. He really is
an asshole.
Huge asshole. He's a massive, massive creep. I'm kind of surprised that I waited till season 8 to do it. So she wrote in her book that Pablo had tremendous sexual needs, and I began to feel harassed, and she felt tremendously burdened with the children, all the duties that their life entailed, and all the people around, and he made her life miserable.
Well,
and
I'm sure
difficult.
He was changing nappies and helping.
Yeah. I'm sure he was super good with the kids. I'm sure he was a doting father. He wasn't. Like I said, he was abusive to her. She was doing everything. She was like taking care of the kids and running the house. And then this asshole insisted that she was the only one who could build the fires in the morning to like heat up his studio. So like,
what, he didn't do it
every
himself?
Morning. No.
Oh, that's
so cool. Every morning she would start the fire in their house, get their furnace going or whatever. And then she'd get on a bike and ride her ass down to his studio and start his fucking fires. And then he would sleep till noon and go to work.
Oh my God. Ay.
He's so terrible. She said that when she wasn't taking care of the kids or attending to his business, she was crying.
Mm-hmm.
She was very, very unhappy. And he would say, you know, once again, he was very cruel. He would say, like, "You were Venus when I met you. You should be ashamed to let yourself go. Your figure and your health. You know, any other woman would improve after birth of a baby, but not you. You look like a broom."
Oh, my. Oh, Jesus.
That shit makes me makes my blood boil. It makes me so mad. I hate that shit. Like the things that women put up with and the things that women go through when they have babies, and then to say that kind of shit to her. I'm like, fuck him. So while all this is going on, of course, he's already cheating. He's cheating with other people. He had a very public affair with a woman named Guinevere Laporte, and she was a reporter who was like 50 years younger than him. Eventually, Francois told him that she was taking the children and leaving him, and she did. She was one of the only women to like actually leave him, and she remarried. But here's where the story gets really fucking bananas. Okay, you ready? It's going to get crazier. Okay. So she was a painter too. He forbid all the art dealers to work with her, so she couldn't work as a painter. And a few years after she left him, and he was in a relationship with someone else by this point, he asked Francois to leave her husband and marry him. And he said if she did, he would put his name on the children's birth certificates. He would give them a last name.
What last name do they have until this point?
I believe they have hers.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And this is a big deal because he's super rich. Mm-hmm. She isn't. She is married, but he's kind of like, hey, if you want your kids taken care of, you need to leave your husband and you need to marry me. Because now Olga has died, so he can get married. Because he was still married to Olga until she passed away in 1955. This is in January 1961. He gives Claude and Paloma his last name. And at the end of February, she asks her husband for a divorce. It's going to get worse. On March 2nd, Picasso married someone else.
What?
He married this woman, Jacqueline Rogue. We're going to get to her in a minute. He totally fucked her over. He ruined her life. Well, marriage with that guy, I should say. Leave your husband and marry me. I'll give your children a last name. He gives the children the last name, and she leaves her husband, and then he married someone else.
So it's bigamy?
No, because he never married her.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not catching up. He asked her, they were planning to do it. He gave them the name, and then he married somebody else.
Yes.
What a dildo. Oh.
Yeah. So 12 days later, 12 days after he married this other woman, Francois opens the morning newspaper and reads that the man she was preparing to marry just got married. He did it to fuck her over.
Shit.
Isn't that fucked up?
That's evil.
Some evil shit. So in 1964, she wrote a book. It's called Life with Picasso. It sold over a million copies. It's out there. And she wrote, Picasso's total absence of empathy and love, his lack of remorse for hurting others, a lust for seduction as a form of exercising power over women, the pattern of idealized devalue and discard every romantic relationship he's had, an underlying desire for control and unshakable narcissism, obviously, and the drive to do evil by damaging the lives of the women who become his partners. That's what she wrote about him. He's really awful.
Oh my God. I'm gobsmacked. I don't even know what to say at this point. Oh,
yeah.
Holy shit.
So he filed multiple lawsuits to prevent the book from coming out. It came out anyway. And he was super angry, and then he refused to ever see the children again.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, take it out on the kids.
Because it's their fault.
Yeah. So we have one last lady here. We have Jacqueline Rogue. She was 26 when she hooked up with 51-year-old Picasso. They were married in 1961, and they actually stayed together until his death in 1973. This is the woman he married instead of Francois. Honestly, she did Francois a fucking favor. Jacqueline was very controlling, and she didn't like reminders of Picasso's life before her, including his children. When Picasso died in April 8th, 1973. It's so crazy to me that he was born in the 1800s and he died in 1973. He lived to be 91. And he died of heart failure. Mm-hmm. And like with his dying breath, he was like calling out for her. And then he turned to his doctor and he said, "You are wrong not to be married. It's useful." That's like the last thing he said. And then he died.
It's useful?
That's so useful. For what? For painting, I guess. I don't know. Like I said, Jacqueline didn't like reminders of his previous life. So after he died, Jacqueline was managing his estate and she refused all of his children or grandchildren to attend his funeral. And she, you know, obviously didn't want them having any money. So the morning of Picasso's burial, his grandson, Pablito, that would have been Paolo's son, was told he could not go to the funeral and he drank a container of bleach and killed himself.
Holy shit.
Right? It's fucking, damn. I was like, what the fuck? These people are, they're fucking cursed. So then his father, Paolo, he has a depression. He was an alcoholic. He drank himself to death 2 years later when he was 54. He was only 54. I know. This part, this is all the stuff where it gets a little dark, but it's going to end in a good way, I promise. Let's see here. Marie Theresa hung herself in a garage on the 50th anniversary of meeting Picasso.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, poor thing.
I know. And then Jacqueline killed herself with a gun in 1986 when she was 59.
Wow. Such destruction.
So much. He fucked up so many of these women. Dora Maar became a Roman Catholic, and she made this very famous statement. She said, "After Picasso, only God." She died. She was 89 years old. She didn't die at her own hand or anything like that, but she did lead a really sad, lonely life after that because he fucked her up.
Yeah.
But Francois actually went on to a pretty good life. So she actually married a medical researcher, and his name is Jonas Salk.
What?
And Jonah?
Yeah, no. Go ahead.
Yeah, he developed the polio vaccine.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one?
Yes, he pursued her. He was quite smitten with her, and it totally worked. And they were married. She had a very successful painting and teaching career after that. She, throughout the 80s and 90s, she did costumes and stage sets and masks for productions at the Guggenheim in New York.
Wow.
She's 98 and she's still alive.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
I know. I was like, yeah.
How many geniuses had she met in her life, if you think about
right?
it? Oh my God.
Once again, in the show notes, there's a link to it's super short. It's like 5 minutes. It's like a little segment on like CBS Morning News, and it's an interview with her. And you could just tell, first of all, she's a super talented painter in her own right. It sucks that she's like tied to Picasso, but you could tell she's super smart. She made some shitty choices, obviously. Yeah, but don't we all? She seems very delightful. So everyone should go watch that. And then I have a quote here from Marina Picasso's book again, because I thought it was appropriate. She says, "No one in my family ever managed to escape the stranglehold of this genius." This is what she wrote. "He needed blood to sign each of his paintings. My father's blood, my brother's blood, my mother's blood, my grandmother's and mine. He needed the blood of those who loved him." And that's our creep, Pablo Picasso.
A fucking vampire. Exactly. Oh, yes, my God.
Yes, he is. He's a fucking vampire. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, he needed the blood. He needed everything from them. Their life force.
Yes, he would take everything from them and make his art. And then when he had enough, he would just fucking move on. But they're still there. It sucks. He's a real fucking shithead.
Well
he's
done, Sonia.
I'm glad it's done.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well done. And I would also say, like, if you guys like Hannah Gadsby, she talks about him in her routines.
That's right.
On her Netflix specials. And also there was an episode of Trashy Divorces where they talked about him. But
ooh, I didn't know that one. I'll go back and listen to that one because I bet that's really good.
It's like one of our sister shows. If you like us, you'll like Trashy Divorces. So, Sonia, would you like to hear about a group that they're not assholes? They're awesome and amazing?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Please.
I'll take a sip of water and we'll go. Do you know who the Gorilla Girls are?
No.
Okay. Awesome. The Gorilla Girls, it's an anonymous group of women who in 1985 decided they were fucking tired of museums not featuring women artists.
And I like where this is going.
Yeah. So they were radicalized. I mean, they were against sexism and racism and homophobia, and they would go to the museums and then just check off how many men were featured in certain collections and how many women were, and the numbers are just atrocious. It's like 90% white males. Mm-hmm. They decide like what the taste, like Picasso, they decide what's good, what's not good, and everybody just goes right along with it. And these women were just like, this is stupid. It's tired. We got to change things. It's the 80s, man. Like, let's shake some shit up. And one of them, they decided they were going to work like a guerrilla force. Like, they were going to go and create some kind of scene to get some attention and make people look at things differently. And one of the women in the group wasn't a very good speller. And so they said, we're the Gorilla Girls. And she wrote out gorilla like the animal, gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, that's actually kind of brilliant. And so they adopted wearing gorilla masks. And they would just show up at events, it started with museums, and then it went to the galleries in Soho, and then eventually they went to the Sundance Film Festival. It's like, how come we don't have more women directors? And they've been around since 1985. They still exist, and they're still anonymous. The women who are their spokespeople, they wear a gorilla mask when they're out in public, when they're talking about the Gorilla Girls. They were on the Stephen Colbert show, and they're hilarious. They have a great sense of humor, but they're fighters, and they are out to smash the patriarchy. They're incredible women. What they did was they would take artwork. Like, they have this very famous poster, and they just say, Do women artists have to be naked to be featured in the Met?
That's what I'm snickering about. I'm like, I just Googled it while you're talking, and I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah. They troll the Oscars for not featuring more women directors. Like, they anatomically correct Oscar, and it's just a big schlumpy guy. They've taken on many, many causes, but it's still about, you know, just supporting women and other voices and people of color, and just like, let's smash, like, all these museums have these boards, and they're filled with billionaires, and they tend to be white people. And mm-hmm. some of them do this because they made their money, let's say, selling opioids and creating an addiction issue in America. Well, what if we put like $1 billion into this, you know, museum? But then they decide what gets in there, what doesn't get in
right.
there. And then they're boring, and they never had any taste because they just did what everybody else did. The same people, like Picasso, still get their shit sold for millions and millions of dollars. And we're all trained to think like that must mean it's really good.
And right.
We don't look at new artists. We don't look at, you know, emerging artists. We don't really see people all around you. There are artists. And they're amazing. And they deserved, like, not everybody needs to be a millionaire, but they deserve just some sort of recognition. And we just thought they want to smash that idea. And they really want to bring, and of course, bring women, but bring everybody there, people who are disabled or whatever. And that's,
I love it.
And they're called the Gorilla Girls. It's spelled like gorilla, like, you know, Banana Republic or whatever, like that. But they wear gorilla masks. They've been around for 35 years. They are kicking ass, and I think they would be just, they are the perfect embodiment of what would have driven Picasso fucking insane.
Oh, totally. He hates women with personality.
They would have trolled his ass. They would have.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been amazing to see. But that's our non-creep this week, the Gorilla Girls.
Awesome choice. I love it.
Thank you.
I Googled it, and I'm doing like an image search, and like, just all the images are so awesome. I'm like, oh my God, when we can all be like out in public again together, I'm like, that would be an amazing Halloween costume. A bunch of women wearing gorilla masks.
And goofing about it, you know, and they don't take themselves that seriously. You should look for this interview with Stephen Colbert with the Gorilla Girls. They laugh at it. I mean, but it's part of they're whimsical. It's part of the fun for them. But they also say it's much easier to be anonymous and have a voice like constantly just be women, you know, just out and, you know, it's just easier, you know,
yeah.
Don't know who it is. And I just like think it's just kick ass. It's worldwide. It's taken off everywhere. And that I'm thrilled to talk about them.
Nice choice. I love it.
Thank you. So that's our episode this week, you guys. And if you like the sound of our voices, and Sonia, do you realize that people can't tell us apart and they're very, very concerned, like who's Margot and who's Sonia?
Apparently. That is so funny. You mentioned that you had a hard time with My Favorite Murder.
Yeah,
I also had that problem for a long time. I mean, in my head, we don't sound the same, but I get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what can we do to help people know the difference?
Sonia's the one that wears the glasses. A lot of people think I'm the one with the glasses and the pink hair. Or you have orange hair now.
I have orange hair now. I've reclaimed orange. I'm taking it back.
I have what I call Real Housewives hair right now. So I've got it really long and really straight and shiny.
Nice.
Yeah.
It looks gorgeous. I know that in the new year, we're talking about maybe doing some Facebook Live stuff. So maybe people can see us. Then they'll get a better idea.
Yeah, Facebook Live or Instagram Live. Like maybe we'll have a
yeah, whatever
or something, and get, you know, sort of you can ask us anything, and maybe that'd be fun. That'd be totally fun.
I think it would be super fun. I love it.
Well, going back to if you like the sound of our voices, we also co-host a show called Dorking Out, where we dork out about movies, and I'm super excited. Our next episode, we're going to be talking about Castaway, which is very interesting movie to talk about. But the best part is Adam Riske from F This Movie is going to be joining us. Everyone loves Adam.
We love Adam.
He's the funniest person alive.
Everybody loves Adam.
Yeah, that should be another t-shirt.
He's so funny.
He's so funny. A lot of women have a crush on him
now. I'll put that in the merch shop.
He's very crushable. So that's going to be our next episode. Next week, we're going to be talking about, I'll just give it to you right now. Keith Raniere. That asshole. Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you, I haven't been watching Seduced or The Vow because I knew this was coming.
Yep.
So this will all, a lot of this will be new to me. So you're going to get like unfiltered, what the fuck reactions from me.
Oh, you're going to get mad. Trust me.
Yeah, I know it.
So once again, follow us on all the things on social media. We love it when you use the Annie Potts GIF. We got one from Ghostbusters and we're at CreepPod on Twitter. Check out Patreon if you want to get some bonus episodes. We also have a newsletter that Sonia creates, and it's really cool. If you listen on iTunes, if you could leave us 5 stars or a review, that'd be really sweet. It kind of counterbalances the shitheads that hate us. The sniveling shitheads.
Yeah, we get some hate sometimes.
We get haterade at times. Our email is whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. Always remember, please keep giving us your suggestions for non-creeps because that's super, super helpful. Mm-hmm. And it's just super nice to like meet new people like that aren't creeps that you guys are introducing to us from all around the world. It's really, really cool. And what else can I say? Sonia, where can they find you?
You can find me at thesoniashow.com and The Sonia Show on Twitter and Instagram, where I'm posting pictures of beer and bread and my dogs. Where can they find you, Margot?
In my zip code, apparently, like the spectrum has been terrible with the Wi-Fi and everything. So sorry, it just kind of went. Anyway,
that's okay.
You can find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick on Twitter and Instagram. I post a lot of pictures of my cats. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And guys, we'll be back next week with a new episode. But in the meantime, please stay safe, wash your hands, maintain social distancing, wear your mask when you're out in public, and don't be a fucking creep.
Creep!
Thank you for listening to us talk about creeps. You can follow us at What a Creep Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
But don't follow us too closely.
You can email us your creepy stories at whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com.
But please keep your dick pics to yourself.